Welcome to the Pulse Podcast, where we talk to digital health enthusiasts, experts, and entrepreneurs from all over the world.
Today, I'm really, really happy that we finally got around to recording this episode. I've been circling her around for quite some time. But before we get and dive deep into conversation with our guest, a quick reminder to subscribe to our YouTube channel and like this video if you want to see more videos like this. So today we have with us Dr. Tazeen Rizvi. She is a healthcare digitization expert who has been working successfully in this space for the past 15 years. Her core expertise is in telemedicine and EMR. She is also an advisor and consultant for various digital health organizations that use innovative technology such as blockchain in the healthcare sector. So welcome to the podcast, Dr. Tazeen.
Thank you so much, Maeda. And yeah, it's been a long time coming. I think we've been scheduling and rescheduling this for a while now. Thank you so much. I've loved all your tech talks, the early ones.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to the rest, and it's really happy to be here.
Thank you so much. And yes, we do have an exciting lineup. Yes. Let's start at the beginning. So you started, I think you've had a very unique career trajectory. You started your career in digital health when there wasn't a lot of scope in it. And so I'm wondering why you chose and how you came into this field.
Yeah, when you ask me to think back, it just makes me feel how old I am. But yeah, it's been a while. So interesting question, Maeda. I don't think I chose this field. I think it chose me. Because when I started off, there wasn't any digital health per se speciality or even a career path. At that particular time, I'm talking about back in late 2007 and 2008. And lucky for me, I landed up being a project manager in a really vast and huge and a multi-million dollar project where the Ministry of Health of UAE was replacing all their paper records in their 100 plus public hospitals and 200 plus clinics and replacing it with an end-to-end EMR solution. And the solution provider was at that time the largest solution provider in the US. They still are a very big player, but at that time, they didn't have anybody else at that level. So interestingly, at the very start of my engagement in the project, I realized that there were two parallels. There was physicians on one side, and there were these technicians and experts on the other, and they just couldn't see eye to eye. So in the first couple of weeks, you know, I went to work and I realized, you know, we come to meetings, we go back, but nothing was getting done. And then without even my knowing or making a conscious decision, I started bridging this gap, which I saw between the doctors and the technicians. And I started saying, okay, come to the table. I will write what you're saying, and I will explain to you, on the other hand, to the developers what they want. Because developers and technicians and technology experts have been building platforms of various industry, but healthcare is a very unique space. We're dealing with human lives and providers, be it therapists or GPs, surgeons, or any clinical specialty, have to have certain features in the system by which they are able to perform their jobs in an efficient manner. So not many people at that time were thinking like that. And I don't know if it's true, but it's definitely changing now that clinicians were not really involved in the process of developing or designing these electronic medical records, which is thankfully with a lot of doctors venturing into the digital space, we see it's changing now. You see a lot of big technology companies now have clinical directors. They have clinicians who can bring in a prospect that a technical person can never tell you, right? You're talking about alerts, notifications, small features that in the end can make such a huge difference. So I would say it chose me. At the time, I didn't even realize what I'm doing. But when I got out of that project and I developed this unique skill set, which I thought there was a demand in the market for, and I guess I've never looked back.
Yeah, and you touched on such an important point that, you know, clinicians and more healthcare providers should actually be part of that process. And I think it's not only changed the dynamics, but it's also improved the products so much.
Of course, So much. I mean, if you talk about the industry of care, or when you talk about tertiary care hospitals, even today, a lot of tertiary care hospitals are run by non-medics.
Yeah.
Because when we were taught in the med school, we were never taught how to be an entrepreneur. We were not taught management skills.
Right.
We did. So we are in a box that we need to treat patients.
Yeah.
We divide ourselves between different clinical specialities,
yeah.
But care is just so much more than that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's all, if a patient comes to see you in a hospital, no matter what a brilliant doctor you are, if they were waiting 3 hours outside, their entire user experience gets affected by that.
Yeah.
So that's when a lot of people started thinking to improve processes, to create tailor-made patient-centric services. We need to involve clinicians and need to improve efficiency of our entire healthcare delivery process, starting from the registration till the point where you're admitted to a hospital and you are discharged from the hospital. Because in the end, a patient will remember the entire experience in one nutshell, right?
Yeah.
So it's very important for the doctors to also take part, active part in improving the processes of the organizations that they work in.
Absolutely.
You know, think outside the box. Your patient is sitting outside for 4 hours. Even if you're a brilliant doctor, they would still say, next time, should I go to him really? Do I have the time to really go to him? And it's so easy. And when you think about improving processes, it's so easy to reduce wait time.
It is.
With taking smart decisions, implementing the right technology, which can really improve. So then you're overall giving a patient-centric care. And in the end, I've seen a lot of doctors. When I started off, the doctors were very resistant because they were so used to writing on a piece of paper. You hand the paper to a nurse, you're done, right? You've signed and everything. But now, obviously, you ask them to fill multiple electronic forms, two electronic signatures, share notes. So it does become a bit difficult for the providers. But once the provider understands the value it brings, they really do adopt it, because they can really see, they can see that even though maybe it takes them 10 more minutes, but look at the outcome. You can open the patient record from any time. You can go back to a record with a click of a button.
Yeah.
So it has been a long journey of, I would say, awareness of the clinicians more than the awareness of the consumer at large, I would say.
Yeah, and this is...
We've come a long way,
Yeah, we have. And this is actually a point that we were discussing. I was discussing with another guest that I had on the podcast. And because it takes, once that database is there, and once, you know, the technology part takes care of that, doctors are actually able to focus on their patients and look at them, smile at them more, be more empathic, counsel them, have that, you know, sort of luxury, I would say, because doctors are really overburdened. They really
definitely
just, you know, listen to the complaints, write the prescription and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I think it was really, you know, it was insightful what you just
and
said.
And it's just that it was baby steps, right? First, we developed electronic medical records that were really chunky. They were difficult to enter.
Right.
In today's age, you've got these clinical decision systems, you've got databases, you've got so much of plug-in that you do things with minimum clicks.
Yeah.
And it just makes your life a lot easier. But it is a learning cycle. It's been a learning curve for clinicians, but I'm so glad that we are here today, where hopefully everybody now understands how important digital technology is in the healthcare industry.
Absolutely. So Dr. Tazeen, I would like to ask you about telemedicine in particular, because it's not a new concept. It's been around for 50 odd years. It's just, you know, been evolving over the years. And so COVID really, you know, compelled everyone to start using virtual care and pushed everyone, even patients, providers, everyone in between, towards telemedicine. So do you think, or do you feel like telemedicine has been, our telemedicine services have been able to meet the increasing demand?
I mean, pre-COVID, I'll just go a little back. So what happened? Why COVID changed it? Obviously, one important factor, we just couldn't go out of the house. We were all stuck in our space and we wanted, and we started doing everything virtually. And obviously, if you're stuck in one place for 1 hour, one whole year, you will start getting everything online. And care, seeing your doctor is one, an important chunk of everybody's life. So yes, we were, I think everything was ready and COVID just pushed us. It just didn't give you an alternative. There was no other way other than to use a virtual platform. Are we there yet in terms of telemedicine? I would say in the last 2 years, telemedicine has advanced more than it did in the last 5 years, post-COVID, yeah? What didn't happen? Because there was less adoption. I would say because of COVID, and it just came suddenly, there are too many telemedicine platforms, which are standalone systems. So yes, telemedicine is here. Is it really how we should take it in the future? No. What we need to do is, so you've got a lot of virtual care platforms out there. Some would give you A, some would give you B, some would give you A, B, C. One would come with a D feature, which is great. But are they all talking to each other? Are they really working towards a goal where we are able to collect enough data that we can actually use that to save lives? So I would say telemedicine is here. It definitely will evolve into much bigger than it is now. And yes, I think it needs to, but it's still, I wouldn't say it met the demands of the entire globe. So we were in a global pandemic, right? Yeah. So again, we talk about a lot of disparity in healthcare as well, like it is in any other industry. There are biases, of course, of all different sorts. Now, COVID came, telemedicine is heavily dependent on your internet connectivity. So when you're talking about the adoption and when you're talking about has it met the demands, yes, it has in the developing countries. But we need to look at a global perspective. Did it meet the demands of the patients in countries where not everybody has a 5G connection?
Yeah.
Not everyone can hold a 20-minute video consultation with a doctor uninterruptedly. Is there enough bandwidth? So I would say no. I think it just highlighted the difference between developing countries and developed countries. When it was only a click of a button for somebody like me sitting in London, because I have 5G or 4G at that time. But what about somebody sitting in Africa? They didn't have access to care then, even with telemedicine. I worked with providers who were there providing the solution, but we just could not find enough internet capabilities in those countries for it to be implemented like it should have been in the developed countries.
Yeah, and so you're drawing a comparison between developed and developing and developed countries, and I'm just going to expand on that and talk about the digital divide or the gender disparity that we see in the digital landscape as well. And it's sad that it's still a topic of conversation, but even in the digital landscape, I was reading a report and it said that 300 million fewer women than men use mobile internet. And this is what experts are calling the digital divide. So, I think here we also have to push the narrative and highlight the opportunity area to actually empower women as well when it comes to healthcare apps and to take control and make informed decisions using definitely technology.
Yeah. So I guess a digital divide, definitely we can take the angle of like there are fewer women who have access to digital technologies, a mobile phone, an internet connection. I will come to the other cultural aspect of the world today. Digital divide, Maida, also are between the economic statuses of people, right? Telemedicine is great. Is accessible by everyone? No. So we have taken a huge jump or a leap that we are adopting telemedicine. But are all segments of our population have access, equal access to telemedicine? No, because it's usually dependent on what? Internet and an expensive piece of device.
Yeah.
Right. It's not only dependent. Okay, you're living in a, let's say, developed country, and that gives you internet. Do you have a mobile phone with a camera.
Yeah.
That you can take a video consultation. Do you have a family of six? Does everybody have individual digital laptops or tablets or phones that you can take a consultation? And I think this entire thing brought so many inequalities, like gender, but just the differences in how we live.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm saying telemedicine is great, it's improved access. Does it improve access for everyone in the population? No. There's a huge segment of population, it does not help. And this is where the opportunity lies. And this is where all of us have to strive towards. That for us to be able to use digital technology to improve access, we need to tap into each segment of the population. Now I'll come to the question where you said women. Yes, it is not only, Maida, I would say, you'll be surprised that we're in 2022, and I'm saying this, that not only they don't have access to a phone or an internet connection, women who have access to a phone and internet connection are not allowed to use it without the permission of a male family member. So during the last 2 years, I've worked heavily in the developing countries. I worked in a lot of African countries. I developed applications for women health, sexual health, in addition to other clinical specialities. And the statistics and the conversations I had with people on the ground were eye-opening, that for me to reach a girl, a young girl, there's so many barriers. It's not only internet. So yes, the digital divide is there. It's not only across gender. It covers a lot of different aspects. And I think I'm so glad that we're talking about health digital divide and the inequality in health now. Everybody wants to know that what can we do to improve it?
Right. And that's why I think it's so important to your previous point. Again, I'm going to refer to that it's so important for not only clinicians, but for women to be at the top tier, to be part of that, you know, product development.
Conversation, team, narrative.
Part of the vision, part of the narrative. It was very interesting. I was reading about an app. It was a pregnancy app. And so a woman was using it and it detected an abnormality. And so she went to the doctor. Everything was normal, but later upon inquiring, she found out that the algorithm of the pregnancy tracker was based on a 40-year-old white male. And so I'm still wondering how it got to market in the first place, but the fact that women are just not involved in the decision-making or the, you know, at the top level, it makes a lot of difference. So you know, you've been in this space for so long, and you're obviously a telemedicine EMR expert. Which aspect or which phase excites you the most, or which one do you think is your most
right now?
Right now, yeah.
Data,
yeah,
excites me the most, and I can see so much potential. I mean, I'm not going to say MI AI, because if you don't have data, there is no MI in AI. ML and AI, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I'm most excited about, clean data. Data that we can use to predict, prevent, and save lives. We've all learned, you've been in med school, that prevention is better than cure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's use the data we have collected to predict, to improve primary care, to be able to use the data collected over a patient's previous 10 years, put algorithms on it, use machine learning to improve decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought a point about the doctors have been really burdened. I mean, I think they bore the brunt of this pandemic more than any other industry. I mean, working long hours and just the sheer trauma of what they saw. I think as a clinician, I wasn't working, but I have friends who have had the frontliners. Yeah. We can't even imagine. And they could not take a day off and say, you know, I'm emotionally not well enough. There was nobody to fill their space.
They didn't have that choice. Yeah.
They didn't have that choice. So when you're moving towards a provider burnout, doctor burnout, you have data, it can fill that void. It's not going to replace doctors, but it can help a doctor make a right decision on a bad day. Everybody can have a bad day, right? You can be a brilliant doctor, but you just didn't sleep well. And then you've just been working too much. Or there's something on your mind that's bothering you. That's where data comes in. And I'm so excited that with this surge of new digital platforms, we are collecting thousands and millions of data, which is gold right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we use this gold for the better, I mean, for
the greater,
ethically,
yeah,
the greater good, and ethically, we're looking at really, really saving lives. And not only in developed countries, but in developing countries, because you can do disease pattern, disease predictions, you can do targeted, you know, these medical camps by knowing what exactly is prevalent in that society. So data is something I'm really excited about. And when you have data, then you have machine learning, then you have artificial intelligence, then you have algorithms. So it's all data that is really going to push boundaries. We need to use data to push boundaries and use it in the right way. That needs to be there, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned Dr. Burnout. And I think we had this conversation before as well, that we should, as clinicians and non-clinicians, also take steps in you know, improving the provider experience.
Definitely,
as well.
Definitely. Yeah.
Because we forget that doctors are also humans.
Yeah, we forget. And we forget, and we're very bad patients. Being a clinician, I'd probably give 1,000 reasons why I'm having some symptoms rather than just pick up a phone and go to a doctor. Or do I rather when I'm just going to take this drug, I'll be fine by tomorrow. Absolutely. But yes, and I'm not talking about physical burnout, Maida. We have to look at the long-term effect of the mental burnout that the doctors saw when they had like 20 or more patients die on their shift, when you couldn't save like young people. You know, we are trained in our med school that it, you know, we will face death, but not at the way this pandemic got, right? You have patients dying without care. There's no bed. So I think this, we really need to think as to create digital solutions which not only help the patient, but really, really look at the provider, see how are they, what do they need?
Yeah.
What makes their life better? I'll come to my first point then. For us to create digital platforms that will make clinicians' life better, you need a clinician on the table.
Yes.
To tell you, to come up full circle, that this is how my life will get better. When I have 20 patients in the waiting room and I have been sitting in this chair for the last 4 hours, what do I need right now to make my life better?
Yeah.
Only a clinician can say. And when clinicians are in the position where they drive design, development, implementation, use of technology is where we're going to come to this shift where everybody is happy.
Yes.
Patients are happy because the doctors are happy, right?
Yeah,
the doctors are happy because you're giving them a platform that's making their life better, not miserable.
Mm.
Like, oh my God, who's going to do all these digitally sign these clinical notes?
Yeah.
Oh, I have these alerts coming on my phone. How do I stop them? So it all boils down to who's designing these platforms, who's selecting which technology to use. Because we, for years I've seen, and it's also such a heartbreaking, I would say, for years I've seen clients and industry buy expensive systems, which nobody uses now, because nobody asks a doctor, do you really need it?
Yeah.
I've worked in hospitals where they've bought machines without even asking their doctors that do they need this for their day-to-day. So you need to have clinicians who are passionate about digital health to make decisions right from the start. Not, I would say it's hard because, okay, you say, oh, I've got a clinical director, I've developed this system. Okay, have a look at it, see if it's okay. It's already cooked. How much can a clinician say? When a clinician comes back and say, oh, can we have this? Can we have this? We usually say, oh, it's a scope creep. It will just undo all our efforts of the last 1 year.
Exactly.
So maybe we will do it next year.
Yeah.
Now, what are you doing? You are not taking. So that's where you need to have clinicians from the start. from the very beginning, from the inception.
Exactly, from the inception.
And I am inception. And I'm so glad that I am working with clients now who reach me when it's just an idea in their head.
Right, right.
It's not even on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
They will call me and discuss an idea.
Yes.
And that's where sometimes I even tell my client if it's viable or not, if it's required or not. So, yeah. So it is very important.
Thank you. I mean, it's such a learning experience from you as well. And thank you for, you know, sharing your experiences and such valuable insights. Just before we wrap up, you know, is there any advice you would give to people sort of wanting to creep into the digital health space and they're sort of unsure, maybe they don't know, maybe they're not, anything that you would like to say to them?
Well, I think it's exciting to be here where we are just because of the technology that I can see around. Initially, I would say this particular field of digital health was a choice, right? I don't like technology. I don't like computers. I'm not good with my phone. I can't be a digital health expert, or it doesn't excite me. Yeah. So I can see a change, Maida. I've seen big universities offer courses for yes. digital health. Not only 5 years ago, if I had to search for a course for digital tech and innovation, I would only find master's courses. Now I've seen a lot of graduate programs. Now, this is where you start. You, at a small age, you're telling children that, or girls as well, that this is a space you can go into.
Yeah.
And it's awareness. And you don't, if you look at that, a lot of people call me and ask me, we want to do this, so, but we don't know maths and we're not good with computers.
Right.
I don't code. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not either, you know.
Yeah.
We need to educate people. So my message to anybody who wants to help or in any other way and doesn't want to be a clinician per se, I think this is a great space. It's such huge potential to save lives, to stand side by side with doctors.
Yes.
And you're playing an as much role as a clinician would play, because you're making their lives better. By making their lives better, you're in the end just improving the entire delivery process.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, people say, oh, become doctors, it's such a noble profession, you save life, and it gives you this sense of satisfaction.
Rewarding. Yeah,
it's rewarding, and it is. It definitely is.
All of those things.
Yeah, I've been a clinician, and I think that's what I miss most of not being in a hospital on a clinical setting. But I guess implementing a system where I have improved the efficiency and I have a happy patient in the end, I think I've done my part.
Yeah.
So it's a great place to be in. This is the time.
Explore. I think it's a great alternative career.
It's a great alternative career, and you don't need to know technology to be
yes.
that to be there.
That's such an important
it, and this, and I would say it needs so many new minds, so many fresh minds, so much new talent, because the old school clinicians will leave the top positions very soon.
Yeah.
Now that'll be replaced by a generation that's tech savvy.
Yeah.
That have grown up with an iPhone in their hand.
Yeah, you're right.
They wear an Apple Watch.
Yeah.
So you're talking about it's a narrative shift completely.
Completely.
Right? We're going to be rewired, or we are getting rewired
yeah.
as how we will approach healthcare in the future.
It's a generational shift, so to speak.
And I think it's an exciting time to do this. There's so much potential. Imagine if this is where we are today. Imagine 10 years when we have so much data.
Yeah.
What are the possibilities?
And all this talk about the
metaverse,
healthcare,
digital wearables. You're talking about augmented reality, virtual reality.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think possibilities are endless. So anybody who wants to be a doctor or wants to be related to any sort of healthcare field, I would really tell them to explore a bit more, learn a bit more. I think technology just gives you this notion that it's all about computers and coding, programming, but it's just more exciting than that.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Dr.
Thank you for having me.
I hope we can do this again soon.
Sure, anytime, Maida.
Thank
you again. This is such a great initiative, Maida.
No, thank you.
I'm really enjoying listening to all your talks.
Thank you.
And I'm so grateful that you could have me over as well as a guest.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.